You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, September 21st, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It is Casual Friday. That means Cliff Schechter will be here to discuss the week's news, or at least a part of it, or at least put it in context, or just make fun of Mitt Romney. Also on the program today, it's Casual Friday, which means we bring on someone to give me a Netflix or Amazon movie recommendation for the weekend. This week it'll be film guy Matthew. Some weeks it's a comedian. Some weeks it's film guy Matthew. Some weeks it's Isabel Gillies. I'm not saying Matthew doesn't, he's not a comedian. He's sort of funny. Also on the program today, may have broken last week, but strikers in Quebec, students, Victoire, or however one would say that in French, a French Canadian, they were successful. Juan Cole does a little digging, finds that Bibi Netanyahu, you know, he's been very worried about Iranian nukes for probably longer than you guys in this room have been alive.
Any day now, any day now.
Right. Also, a report on the increase in the poor in New York City, income disparity in Manhattan, just astronomical heights now. And, of course, it is a weekday or a weekend day. Doesn't matter. Mitt Romney has said something just utterly bizarre, and they're just imploding. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anything like this. We'll be talking to Cliff about this more, but I just literally, for the first time, I don't know, in 15 years, just laughed hysterically at a Saturday Night Live sketch. Both, it was one, I guess, from last weekend, and I never watched the program anymore, just because, you know, if there's anything that's even remotely possibly potentially fun or amusing, I'm not allowed to engage in it. At least unless it has to deal with, you know, politics. So if there's any opportunity that I could actually laugh at something that has nothing to do with, well, I guess this does have to do with politics, but there you go. I wouldn't have known. They did a Fox and Friends parody of the Mitt Romney tapes, and I have to say, I don't know that I've ever seen like Saturday Night Live go that far. I mean, it's one thing to sort of take Sarah Palin's own stuff, you know, own words, and then just sort of riff off of those own words where she says something like doubles down on the stupid. Like, I've seen them make fun of politicians for being stupid, but they were actually sort of going, they were actually doing the subtext of Mitt Romney, which was very political. And it was hilarious. I mean, it was also just well done. The whole thing was really well done. And you know, I was on Spitzer's show last night on Viewpoint, and Elliot Spitzer was going like, yeah, this is over. And he is a fairly cautious, circumspect guy, because I've been saying it's been over for Mitt Romney now for, honestly, how long has it been? Matt, you've been around here for a while. How long have I been saying this?
Since Mitt Romney threw his hat in the ring, I would say.
No, I mean, honestly, I think I was saying in February, certainly during the primary, maybe before then, I don't know, but and
probably after that first debate.
I don't know. I mean, it was sometime during the primary. The guy was just not capable of winning. And now Mitt Romney is not only stinking up the joint for himself. Fortunately, there's good and bad. Let me put it this way. There's good and bad about Mitt Romney being this bad. The good is it's starting to hurt down ticket races. Mentioned the other day that Democratic and independent enthusiasm to vote in this election leapfrogged Republicans that were in head and now have like almost a double-digit lead over Republicans, which suggests to me that a lot of people are going to be voting against Mitt Romney, which suggests to me also that a lot of people who are going to be voting against Mitt Romney will end up voting for other candidates down ticket that I am more likely to like. And that maybe, I don't want to speak for you people, but I imagine you will also appreciate more too, just in general. You got guys like Tommy Thompson now in Wisconsin coming out and blaming Romney for the polls, for his sagging poll numbers. This is bizarre, because Tommy Thompson is exactly the guy who you would anticipate would benefit from a Mitt Romney. If I had told you a year ago Mitt Romney's going to run, give me the sort of composite of the Republican that's going to benefit the most from Mitt Romney running, and I would describe someone like Tommy Thompson, someone who is sort of like a sort of old school, sort of moderate-ish, you know, it's a relative term, Republican. And he's getting hurt by Mitt Romney. So that's the good. The bad news is, and for those of you joining this program for the first time, or returning for the first time in a long time, you should know that I have great concerns about President Obama's stated willingness to cut things like Social Security and Medicare, the reported willingness that he's put these things, reports that he's put these things on the table, not just willing to, has put them on the table for the Republicans, deals in which have been scuttled in the past because Republicans refuse to accept any new revenue, i.e. tax increases on the wealthy, on anybody. The expiration of tax cuts, however you want to frame this. The closing of loopholes, whatever, however you want to frame it. Any net new revenues has been really the only thing preventing the striking of the grand bargain. And we know that Erskine Bowles, appointed to the so-called Deficit Commission, which never had a report, along with Simpson, Erskine Bowles is supposed to be the Democrat. The liberal, I mean, I don't know if anybody ever made that claim, on this commission. He has been an opponent of Social Security, desirous of privatizing it since his time in the Clinton administration. Since that time, of course, I don't think that idea has diminished, because when you're sitting on the board of directors of Morgan Stanley, you're probably not too concerned with the idea of all that dumb public money coming into fill the coffers of the stock market. And he and his organization now have raised anywhere from $25 to $75 million to promote a so-called grand bargain. You'll recall that Simpson and Bowles Their commission never passed the report, so there really was no Simpson-Bowles report. There was a letter from those two guys who were talking about cutting Social Security, even though it was not part of the mandate, even though it doesn't create $1 of deficit or debt in this country. Zero. And the one thing that has, to the extent that has mitigated my fears of a grand bargain, is knowing that the Republicans refuse to accept any revenue increases. And then we hear from David Koch, who a couple of weeks ago say we may have to accept revenue increases. And then yesterday, Jim DeMint reported in Bloomberg, we may have to accept tax increases. He walked it back in Politico a couple hours later. But in the meantime, Senator Bob Corker, if things stay as they are, and all the players are generally the same, in other words, we are anticipating Mitt Romney losing, the Republicans holding the House, the Democrats holding the Senate, finding a responsible reform for Medicare is the secret to unleashing very productive talks that would put in place a balanced solution to our fiscal problems. If you deal with the Medicare issue, then Republicans are far more open to looking at revenues. To the extent that there is a Medicare issue, and there is, it is a function of increasing medical costs in this country. Cutting Medicare will not make it cheaper for anybody to get health care. It will simply mean that individuals will have to pay more as senior citizens. That's it. And ultimately, to the extent that they end up not paying for those things, or that it drains their coffers, it'll end up being a cost that we have to pick up in Medicaid. And if we don't end up picking in Medicaid because we've made cuts to Medicaid, we're going to end up picking it for it because we're going to have to pay for them when they go to the emergency room. So the solution that to Medicare has to be one that impacts the cost of medicine in this country. And frankly, we all know what you need to do to do that, and that is to move towards a single-payer system, move towards a buy-in for more people in Medicare. That's going to be the solution. In the meantime, they will cut Medicare and make middle class and poor people suffer more. And if they have the opportunity to do the same thing with Social Security, they'll do it there too. The only bright spot there is that we've been hearing a lot of senators, including Harry Reid, and 28 members of the 53 Senate Democrats caucus have signed a letter opposing any cuts to Social Security as part of a deficit reduction package. Sheldon Whitehouse has spoken about this on this program and in other places. So that's your grand bargain watch for the day. Sorry to be a little downer, but the good news is we're going to spend the next couple half hour or so crapping on Mitt Romney. So that should be fun. Now, Cliff is on a plane, so we recorded this last night because we both, like, we're like giddy school children. We've never seen anything implode like this before. So it is now time for Cliff Schechter. And, of course, before we get to Cliff Schechter, we have the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. If you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, every Friday that is really a Friday, we welcome onto this program Cliff Schechter, as we've done now for, gosh, seems like years and years, and probably is pretty close. Now, of course, Cliff, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. Good to be here. And yes, I think the first time we sort of messed around doing it was when we were at one of those fun conferences in Vegas. And it kind of went from there, so I don't even know. We could be heading towards 2 years now.
Was that the first time? No, that was not the first time. Was? No.
I think, I'd been on your show before, but the first time is sort of we did like a segment, you know, like two in a row or something, because we were both at that fun, you know,
the Tort Conference.
Yes, the Tort Conference we go to with our pal Pap Antonio, and I think we just had so much fun doing it, you kind of asked if I'd do it regularly, and I said I would have made you if you hadn't asked, and it kind of went from there.
Now, this week, we got to say, full disclosure, we're actually having this conversation on a Thursday evening because you're going to be traveling, but
ironically traveling to where you are right now, indeed. But sadly, I'm going to be on the plane when we would normally do our discussion.
Now,
so what are you going to do?
It's just the Romney implosion. I just felt like, first of all, I would be doing not only the audience a tremendous disservice not to hear from you during this week, I would be doing myself a tremendous disservice because this is just stunning.
And frankly, me, Sam, because if I can't sit here with you and have fun at the end of a solid week of what Romney has been up to, I really feel like I'm missing something from my life.
This it is. I mean, all right. Look, we have been saying. I know that about a year ago, we were saying, you know, maybe even a little bit more. We were saying Romney could be a problem if he keeps up this talk of jobs. At one point, he said, like, you know, Mr. President, jobs are not a bump in the road. And we thought, oh, he's starting to use some type of like populist rhetoric. He's talking about the middle class. And then for some reason that all went away. I don't know if it was because he was scared away because of Occupy or the primary. And it's just been a relentless downward spiral from there. I don't know what to say about this guy. I'm actually lamenting how bad of a candidate he is because he's not pushing the Democrats to where I think they need to be pushed.
I think that's a great point. And you know, I'll be honest. I mean, I almost, and then I remembered how, you know, what he said about 47% of us. And I will admit that there have been a few times, for example, there's this time when I used a restroom in a public park. So I do expect the government to serve me, and therefore I'm a victim. me and the other 46.9999%. But, you know, I almost felt sorry for him for a second until I sat there and looked at that and just said, wow, you're just a terrible human being. Because I don't remember seeing anything like this. You and I are similar age, Sam, and have probably been following politics since, you know, the late 80s or early 90s campaigns, and maybe longer. And I just, you know, we've seen some things. Michael Dukakis along the way, and you know, George Bush Senior, and John Kerry, and I mean, some amazing things. Bob Dole, how can I forget that? That was the first one I worked on, and you've never seen anything like this, where the last scandal isn't finished being done, or last gaffe isn't finished being done yet, before the new one. Like, do you realize that no one's paid attention the last week to the fact that Mitt Romney said that being middle income is making somewhere between $200,000 and $250,000, or perhaps below that? Like, no one's paid attention to that, because in the meantime, he's attacked a sitting president over the fact that an American ambassador was killed, and a video has come out of him basically saying half the country should be locked up somewhere in some place where they can't breathe, perhaps, and thrown into the ocean because they're worthless and don't add anything and mooch off the rest. I mean, it's amazing. I've never seen, honestly, and I'm not just saying this. I've never seen anything like this before.
Now, I'm going to defend Mitt Romney in some way.
Nice.
This is without actually even turning myself into a pretzel, but I will say, now we have to remember, this tape is from May, and I think that Romney must have stopped saying this to people sometime around May when it became apparent that that the Democrats were going to make an issue out of his taxes. Because the irony is that he is complaining about 47% of the American public who do not pay federal income taxes. We have good reason to believe that, at the very least, he doesn't pay, or I should say at the very worst, he doesn't pay federal income taxes, or that he didn't pay federal income taxes on money that he actually hid illegally from the government, and
right.
had to pay a fine and took advantage of the 2009 tax amnesty for people who had Swiss bank accounts, or just the fact that he is taking at least 20% off of his marginal rate that he would be paying simply because of he invests his money as opposed to actually works. I mean, the
right.
audacity, the sheer stunning audacity, because people
when you make the money he made, and at worst, as you know, at worst, was paying a similar tax rate to the 1 year he released. We know that that's at worst 13.9%. Which was my response on Twitter when I saw that, when he said 47%. You know, my response simply was, well, 86% of Mitt Romney doesn't pay taxes.
Right, exactly.
I mean, you know, it's like, what, are you kidding me? You know, you're a guy who's been, as far as we know, making, again, at worst, about $20, $21 million a year. These are during your slow years. And you've been paying 13.9%, and apparently to either pay that or less, been doing all sorts of things, anywhere from throwing your money into Swiss banks where there's arms dealers and drug cartels keep their money, or you've been actively avoiding and had to use a tax amnesty. Some one of these reasons, or you paid nothing because when some of these numbers have come out since Mitt opened his mouth, there actually are a number of people that make between 200 and 500,000, and even a number of millionaires who pay nothing in taxes. Some people actually sat down and analyzed. I can't remember the numbers. And that's because they lost money in the market, enough money during some of the down years there that they were able to write off, you know, they were able to put their losses against their income. And they already were probably getting that the loophole, the carried tax loophole, carried interest loophole. So they paid nothing. So basically, this guy, through a combination of methods, has been paying at worst on $20 million, 14%, and is calling other people moochers?
Right.
I mean, it's amazing.
That's the thing that people should understand. If you're not paying federal income taxes, all you're doing is not paying federal income taxes. That's the bottom line. It's just you're exercising generally some type of tax credit. It is all at the very least as legal as Mitt Romney not paying any wage taxes
right.
on his wages.
That's right. That's a great point. He doesn't pay any taxes on his wages. He just pays that. That's a fantastic point.
I mean, it's just simply. I mean, and I don't think. To defend him now, that he would actually be saying this today behind closed doors.
He also, to defend him, was just made aware of this thing called a camera technology only about a month ago. And when, once realizing that moving images could be recorded and shared with others via something called the internet that I think the government originally invested in, then I think he changed his tactics a little bit. So that's a good. Did you see though one of the best things of that whole one things about this to come out was that apparently Jimmy Carter IV had something to do with this happening?
Oh yeah, it was Jimmy Carter's grandson.
Because he's so pissed about what they say about. Good for him. That Carter's revenge, baby.
Oh,
I love it.
No, he said, "Look, I'm a partisan Democrat, and I couldn't be happier if this."
You want to f with my grandpa?
Exactly. Fine. I don't know how he ended up digging it up. I know this thing was floating around. In fact, now the amazing story is like this could go on for weeks because every day somebody isolates another part of this thing and puts it out there. When I was hosting Hayes this weekend, the producer showed me a clip that I spoke about on the program yesterday where Romney starts off by saying, you know, 95% of it is of we are just got it. 95% of it made just by being born in the country. And then he talks about this company, this factory that he and his Bain buddies want to buy in China and how horrible the working conditions were until they found out that, in fact, the fence around the factory was not to keep these 21-year-old girls in. It was to keep other ones out because they were so envious of these working conditions. And then he goes on to cap this whole story off by saying, you know, again, just by being born in America, you know, we're 95% of the way there, which both belies the why we, you know, that we built
that we didn't build it thing, because in America did help you build it, didn't it?
Yeah, and also talks about how he thinks that all Americans are basically in the same boat, and the only differential is a 5% swing one way or another, whether or not you have better opportunities or less opportunities, which is just even more delusion.
Right. It's kind of like how he admitted to Keynesianism, you know, during one of his talks. I think it was an interview with Fox News or something a couple of weeks back, that, you know, about we needed some more stimulus. He even admitted that if we were to cut military spending, because that would lead to there being a loss of jobs, admitting to Keynesianism. It's just like there's no coherence, nothing. He doesn't really obviously believe anything, and I'm not breaking any new ground there, but it's like he's not convinced of what he believes. I don't think he really knows what he believes. I think in the end it can shift from one moment to the next depending upon who's whispering in his ear, and I think it leads to things, and that's the portrayal, at least in that Politico piece of them, and I think that's what leads to things like Clint Eastwood screaming at lawn furniture and, you know, and on a stage, and things like him coming out and attacking the president of the United States, you know, as we're being attacked abroad and our people are being killed, and not really understanding how utterly ridiculous and wrong that is, you know? I mean, and beyond that, when you said we're going to be taking things out of this videotape for weeks, you know, what about the section, which I haven't seen get huge play, where he said how he'd love to take advantage of, like, an Iran hostage-type situation?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I haven't even gone over that. I mean, yes, we hear how sort of disturbingly, I mean, this guy is so, when we're talking about foreign policy, he is so flip about it. It seems to have no, he seems to have no awareness. I mean, this was the stunning thing about the way he injected himself into that embassy thing. He seems to have no awareness, and also the same thing about the Palestinians that he said in this footage as well. He seems to have no awareness of the sensitivity. I'm not talking about like, oh, you shouldn't be mean to other countries, but the sensitivity that's involved when you're talking about geopolitics, and because everything is magnified because you're dealing with the domestic politics of some other country that
right.
is influencing that leader. So you're putting people into sort of like constantly with every word he says, putting people into between a rock and a hard place.
He's putting people in harm's way. I mean, yes. When you open your mouth in the way he did, let's call it what it is here. You know, when you open your mouth on a foreign policy issues such as those, and they're at that moment, I mean, anybody who knows anything, you know, just as common sense, but certainly if you know anything about foreign policy, you understand that the reason that in Egypt, you know, that they issued that statement from the embassy is because they didn't want to be attacked.
Right.
I mean, they were trying to prevent something from happening, which, look, seems like that was a really dumb thing considering what happened in Libya, right? They knew what they were doing. Because these are seasoned diplomats and people who spent time abroad and probably have a better idea than Mitt Romney will ever have. I mean, so, you know, the amazing thing is that he keeps going the next day. And there's obviously things going on the next day. And then in Tunis, our embassy is being attacked. I'm trying to think where else. Aden, in Yemen. Yeah, I mean, he's still opening his big gap, putting people in danger. And the thing is that he doesn't get is in this day and age, with beyond we had, you know, cable and the rest for years, and now with social media and it being instantaneous, you know, when you open your mouth on stuff, markets crash and bombs fly in the air. I mean, not to mention other things. And the judgment they have. Look, there's no better example and no better case than that than George W. Bush. We elected somebody who opened his big mouth, said things while American troops are in harm's way, bring it on, and things like that, egged on the opposition, did stupid things, didn't, you know, sort of in a very glib way, talked about things and didn't think he had to prepare for stuff, and ignored warnings for unimportant things like terrorists attacking on 9/11 and storms hitting New Orleans, and that maybe going into Iraq wasn't going to lead to flowers being thrown at our troops, you know, and that the economic markets were starting to have problems. He ignored these things. And you know, God knows what other stupid, you know, all I can't remember the list of dumb things he said. In this age, the danger is if you elect somebody who just speaks without thinking, I mean, you know, who's taken seriously.
He's not, I don't think he's stupid in the way that Bush is stupid. I think he said it in that tape that he is incredibly opportunistic and, but recklessly so. And I have to say that the one thing that really has come out for me in terms of these tapes, I mean, not to sort of like get off of foreign policy again, but is that this guy really feels sort of victimized, both sort of entitled and victimized simultaneously, complaining that, you know, had he been a Latino, he would definitely be winning, you know, without
right.
sort of acknowledging that, like, had I been Latino, had my father been born of Mexican parents, there's a very good chance he wouldn't have been governor of Michigan, and also a very good chance he wouldn't have been CEO of a major American car company back in the 50s and 60s.
You know, it was a good time for Latino men back then to run large car companies.
Right, yeah, particularly in America.
Right.
So, you know, the measure of sort of self-pity and self-aggrandizement simultaneously, maybe those are two sides of the same coin, are just – it's just stunning, and I think, you know...
But doesn't that tell you, in a way, I don't want to cut you off, but in a way, what you're saying is so perfect, because isn't that the exact analysis you'd use of these guys marching around with their tri-corner hats and their little Tea Party charade? They're alternatively victims, and they're alternatively feel like they're entitled.
At the values...
They're entitled...
Absolutely, the Values Voter Summit. What did Rick Santorum say? You know, when Rick Santorum said... the smart people think that you're crazy or whatever. He was being sarcastic, and he was saying that you people are being attacked. It is
right.
always this sort of self-pity.
They're always victims. I mean, the liberal media, liberal academia, you know, when somebody opens their mouth, I saw like a Newsbusters item that I was laughing my butt off at today. I didn't mean to come across it. I did by mistake. Lest anybody think I go read that stuff on purpose, that was attacking Joe Scarborough for being a liberal. I mean, anything that is not like to the right of Attila the Hun is liberal bias. Everything's liberal bias. Everyone's coming to get us. Everyone, you know, everyone got that, you know, they got that job because they're black or Hispanic or gay or whatever. I mean, it's just the whole thing is this victimization and whatever, and at the same time they feel entitled to have the country the way it was, at least socially. They don't understand that economically it was a very different country than the one they think it was 50 years ago, but they want it to be socially the way it was. The blacks sit in the back of the bus, and the women, you get to josh around with them at work and grab their butts, and otherwise they're your secretaries, and otherwise they stay at home, and you know that's what the world is supposed to be. It's this victim entitlement. So it's funny because we thought Mitt Romney came from what I would call the most sort of enlightened strain of the GOP that almost doesn't exist anymore, the kind of, you know, moderate to liberal Rockefeller Republican strain. But the truth is, much like George W. Bush, whose family also came from that part of the party, they've both done very well in sort of transferring their mindsets over to what is the mindset of the current Republican Party,
right,
which is you're entitled or you're a victim. You're one or the other, but you're both really at the same time.
Well, that's where your victimhood springs from, right? Is I'm not getting what I am entitled to.
That's exactly right.
We're under siege. My marriage is being, my traditional marriage is under siege because there are two men somewhere in the country that can get married.
I know. I got a call from Mike Huckabee today here in Ohio. He called on my phone, and he told me
that gay
marriage was coming here to threaten my family.
Is he doing robocalls?
He is, and apparently whoever had the phone number before we moved here 4 months ago is on the crazy list. So we get to be on the crazy list too, and we bought our house here from a bunch of right-wingers. So, I get it all, man. I get the DVDs in the mail that are going to explain to me Barack Obama's anti-colonial hysteria. I get the direct mail. I'll start sharing it with you weekly if you want. It's pretty funny stuff.
I want to ask you a question now that I've got you here. I mean, I want to talk more about how the money, like we had been anticipating, may be leaving Romney. And I want to talk about the implications down ticket. But before we get there, I have a question that you may be able to answer.
Nothing involves math.
Well, no, because you've worked on a lot of campaigns across the country. And
right.
I, for the life of me, I can't figure out what Mitt Romney is trying to do with this ad. He's put out an ad featuring a coal miner,
right,
complaining that President Obama is attacking coal.
It's like a coal executive too, isn't it?
Dressed
as a coal miner.
No, this is. Well, I don't know if
I thought that came out that somebody exposed that it was actually a coal executive pretending to be a coal miner.
You're kidding.
But whatever.
I'm gonna look at this and you know. But let me play the clip for you so you hear it, because the guy's not dressed. You know, It's really made up like he's supposed to be just a blue-collar guy, but here it is.
Right.
My family's worked in a coal industry for over 60 years. This is the way of life we know.
Pause it for one second. Now, you know what? Now that you say that to me, I notice he says the coal industry, not in the coal mines.
See?
Go ahead.
The policies that the current administration's got is attacking my livelihood. About that he was going bankrupt any new power plants that opened up, it's coal fired, and he's keeping his promise. I got two young grandsons. I'm scared for their future, let alone mine. I support Mitt Romney.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
What'd you say?
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
So you're going to have to tell – I couldn't hear it. Just give me the quick synopsis.
Well,
and
the guy
says,
like, you know, we've been in the coal industry, my family, for generations, and I'm worried about my grandson's
right,
my grandkids' future because President Obama promised to basically bankrupt coal-fired power plants, and he's holding his promise. And I'm just worried about my grandkids. Apparently, he's also probably, my guess is, if what you're saying is true about the executive, he's also worried about the estate tax hitting him if he doesn't die soon.
He's worried about that. He's worried about the carried interest loophole being taken away. Yeah. He's worried about a lot of stuff.
I'm worried that some of this coal might actually get on my skin. I'm very rarely in contact with the actual
I'm worried product. That there may be regulations that may keep some of my workers' lungs, their original color.
Well, but here's my question to you, okay?
Yep.
West Virginia and Wyoming are the biggest coal mining states. Are there two other states in the country that President Obama has less of a chance to win anyways? I mean, maybe
no,
Alabama, maybe there's a couple more in the South, but I mean, what?
I thought of this too, because the only state that is a coal mining state at all is the one I'm sitting in, Ohio. It's the only swing state right now. I mean, I don't think they're advertising anymore, if I'm correct. They weren't before. Last time I checked, in Pennsylvania was already,
right.
You know, they've given up on what. So that would be Western Pennsylvania. So I mean, if you go down Appalachia and you go down the mountains, Kentucky, Tennessee, not in play, Alabama, not in play, Georgia, not in play. If you go through the Appalachian part, the only one you come up with is Ohio. And then, and then you go out west and you're right. The only other one I could think of besides Wyoming that's a big coal state is Montana. And if he's in trouble in Montana, where I think, you know, most recently Nate Silver gives Obama an 11% chance to win, you know, Montana's closer than some of the Deep South and other Western states because it's not quite as crazy, you know, but I mean, I don't think he's trying to defend Montana. So the only thing I can think of is that that's an ad strictly for Ohio. And he's so far behind here. The only thing that I can think of is that they're saying we've lost some working class whites in southeastern Ohio who should be completely in Romney's camp, but aren't, maybe because of anything from the 47% remark to his foreign policy idiocy to the ads that Priorities USA has smartly kept running here, even after all the smart people, as Santorum would say, in Washington said, oh, it doesn't work to attack, private equity. It does here. And with the combination of Obama's, that super PAC doing that, and they're turning the convention and the post-convention period into one big, speech, largely about the auto bailout, just destroyed Romney here.
I mean, I got to think that in Ohio, going for those guys is playing on your own turf. I mean, that's a completely defensive move because I would imagine that the majority of people in the associated with the coal industry in Ohio, one would suspect that they're going to be Romney voters anyways. And
yes,
the people who are not involved in coal are far more likely have a problem with coal.
He needs suburban Cincinnati and suburban Columbus voters is what that's who he should be fighting for right now to win this thing. They're the sort of more socially liberal, fiscally moderate kind of. If he's lost the kind of working class voters that make up the southeast of the state, also part of like the northwest. Although the northwest is more farm belt Indiana type. And my guess is he's still got them, although who knows with what he said. But if he's losing those kinds of voters, you're right. I mean, look, when three or four polls come out in a row, and the closest one has Romney down by 4 points here, and the spread has now gone all the way up to 8 or 9, I mean, you know, he's in a lot of trouble here. Some people have admitted it's gone. So he's created an ad that what that should tell you that's almost specifically for here, although I did just think of one other thing, Sam.
Yeah.
There are probably, if I'm correct, is coal mining in the western part of Virginia.
Okay.
So he may be running that in Virginia, too. And frankly, that would make a lot of sense, because if you think about it, Virginia and Ohio are the two where, if you look at recent polls, Obama has been pulling away, and frankly, that's the end of the race. Like, Obama's still pretty well up in Colorado and in Florida and in a few others, but Virginia and Ohio, he's been really pulling away, and that's a done deal. I mean, you know, Romney already, if he loses one of the two,
right,
has to pretty much run the table. He loses both, he's toast. So that may be what it is. My guess is that adds up in Virginia, too.
Interesting. Because, I think we're at the time now where we're just looking to consultants who are basically going to be just like, all right, we got to rack up some fees here.
I wish I were like one of those guys who could do that and feel good about myself in the morning.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the beauty about that's why you're not one of those, makers. It's because you're a taker, baby. And you don't have the entrepreneurial can-do spirit. You're against success. That's what you're saying there.
Look out, biatches. I'm coming through town to take.
And so, because I, we've been talking for a while about when we're going to see the real movement of money out of the Romney race. I'm not convinced we hadn't seen these decisions made in a more sort of quiet and subtle way even a couple of months ago. But Crossroads GPS, Karl Rove, now is being pretty public about their moving into senatorial races and into House races.
Have they said they're pulling out presidentially?
They haven't said they're pulling out presidentially, but they're saying they're focusing slightly. So, it's sort of like, well, we got so much money, we're just going to change our emphasis a little bit.
Legitimate rape. It's just something you say. We're just going to jump right back in there in Missouri.
We're seeing now a poll that came out, I guess this was by Gallup, came out yesterday, that voters in 12 states, USA Today and Gallup, consider the key swing states that could decide the 2012 presidential election. 6 in 10. Or let's put it this way. 6 in 10 are either extremely or very enthusiastic, up from 46%. So it's 59% up from 46% over the past 2 months in terms of Democratic and independent voters. Now, when independent voters, well, first off, Democratic voters get that much more excited. I don't think they're more excited to vote for Mitt Romney. When independent voters over the next 22 months get more excited, I don't think they're getting more excited to vote for Mitt Romney.
You don't think they watched that convention, the Republican one, and got excited by that thing?
Even what was it that Clint Eastwood said today, yesterday, well, Thursday? He said, "Well, hold on, Matt will tell me."
He said something like, "If you're stupid,
ask me to speak at your convention, you get what you or something. You have to take what you can get, or something of that sort."
That is awesome. He and Tim Pawlenty must be just like laughing now. Pawlenty also jumping off the ship. He can't even wait 6 weeks.
I know. He's like, yeah, financial roundtables. Serve my paychecks. I was never a part of this whole thing.
Right. Now, let's do this now.
I know. It is amazing. They're jumping off. And I think, to be fair, I won't ever in my life use the words to be fair to Karl Rove. But to look at what Crossroads GPS is doing, again, reading some of the analysis out there from a variety of different places, Cook Report, Nate Silver stuff, other people that do this stuff, they've been, and if you just look at polls, they've been cratering in the Senate races.
Right.
The story has now been, and I know because for a few clients, I'm not doing anything on any Senate races, but I'm doing some stuff, I'm looking at a few House races, for example, and you're seeing the poll numbers change drastically. And that is there's a combination of things, but a lot of it is when Romney is tanking. tanking the way he is, and Obama's standing is going up, that, you know, that affects stuff down ballot, obviously. I mean, Tammy Baldwin shooting ahead in Wisconsin, and finally, I've been waiting so long, Elizabeth Warren shooting ahead in Massachusetts, and, you know, obviously McCaskill shot ahead for other reasons in Missouri, but a couple of these races, I mean, Linda McMahon, my God, was hanging in there in Connecticut because she's spending the kitchen sink and then some. But now it looks like finally Chris Murphy is starting to pull away in that one. And so, you know, you're seeing that dynamic playing out, and I think, you know, I saw this, people are now giving the Democrats either a 3-4 or 4-5 chance or somewhere in that of holding on to the Senate because of what's going on. So I think Crossroads GPS is also, it's not just Romney, but I think they're freaking. I think they're looking, they thought the Senate was a done deal, and now it's not only is it not a done deal, but actually odds are against them. You know, I mean, they start off already with, you know, having lost Maine because of Olympia Snow, and Angus King is sort of, you know, yes, he's an independent, and yes, on things like the Grand Bargain, you and I will have a lot to say about Angus King, right. But he's a center-left kind of Democrat. Who said he's going to vote for Obama.
Independent.
Well, he's an independent, but I meant his views are those of a center-left Democrat.
Okay, right.
I worked on a Senate race in 2002 in when he was governor in Maine. He's for gay marriage. He's pro-choice. He's, you know, he's not, he wouldn't come anywhere close to fitting in the Republican caucus. I think he's going to caucus, and he said, come out and said he's voting for Obama. So read into that what you will. And so that's a seat that's a turnaround. And then you start looking at some of the other ones, like we're talking about Scott Brown and things like that. They suddenly are in a lot of trouble, and the races that should be gimmies, like in North Dakota and Montana, aren't, you know, I mean,
I have such mixed feelings about the Senate. I mean, obviously, I don't want the Republicans to control the Senate, if only because of the Supreme Court. But at the same time, the Senate is just going to be full of people who are going to be very excited at the prospect of cutting Social Security, cutting Medicare. And they may have been even better on that if they were in the minority. I'm not sure.
Well, that's why that's the thing, the Supreme Court and things like that. And that's why what I sit here rooting for first and foremost, the Elizabeth Warrens, the Tammy Baldwins, people like that who I'm quite sure I could be wrong, but I would think would be with us on these issues. Mm-hmm. Secondarily are people like Angus King, you know, who will be with us on a lot of other issues, but we're going to be fighting, my guess is, tooth and nail on Grand Bargain. And then, of course, the last rung of that ladder are the Joe Donnellys and people like that in Indiana, who's a blue dog, and who I guess, if we already have a majority, maybe I want him to beat Richard Murdoch. If his seat is what determines the majority, I definitively do, because obviously I want the majority, but at the same time, I know going in that he's horrible. And he's just going to take the place of Ben Nelson, and I'm going to be cursing him not just on the Grand Bargain, but on choice and guns and gay rights and everything for a long time. So I get that. You know, it's tough to because we have to sit here and be pragmatists while also realizing there are people that we're going to really dislike.
And in terms of the House, there's very little chance for the Democrats to pick up the House. I mean, if only because one of the major reasons, as far as I can tell, seems to be in California. The Democrats did a very bad job of getting up. They changed the way that primaries run. They actually now will have general elections where even in some districts with a majority of Democratic registrations, you will have no Democrat running on the ballot. And I'm talking to Republicans running.
Right. You're right in general, and obviously, I mean, the biggest thing that's against us is with the Republicans taking all full-out states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida, and states like that in 2010, you know. Redistricting killed us. I mean, there's still a big battle here. I mean, we may be in a situation where a referendum might undo our redistricting because it's so ridiculous here, and you may have people not knowing what seats they're in even after they win this election. That's how crazy and screwed up the whole thing might be, because they may have to take it back to court. I mean, it's going to be, these guys gerrymandered. Of course they did. We knew it, that they would. And so, yeah, that's complicated, because otherwise I would think we'd have a decent shot at taking the House back if things keep going. Because if things keep going in this direction, I don't see it being like 2008, to quite that level, but I could see Obama, you know, winning by five, you know, a little bit over that points, and winning by enough that in a number of marginal districts were pulled over the top, and who knows, could potentially take back 25 seats or so. And I think, would we need 27 or something like that?
Well, the real question is, will we get enough that of people into the House who will not go along with the grand bargain? Because the Republicans are sure to lose at least some percentage of their caucus, because a grand bargain would include raising taxes, but not as much as I might have guessed probably a year ago, because you got guys like David Koch out there basically saying, you know, you've got the green light to vote to raise taxes.
That's the most worrisome thing is that.
So
yeah.
We need to have enough Democrats who are not going to play along with this, who would also shoot down the grand bargain from the left. And I don't know if that's going to happen.
Well, you're right, and that's why we need to take back more seats rather than fewer in the House. And obviously, the quality of whoever wins matters. So district to district, it's different. But, you know, wouldn't it be nice if we're talking about the Elizabeth Warrens and Tammy Baldwins, if we could have a good, you know, sort of 15 or so of those types of candidates. And they're out there, and there are a bunch that have a chance that are in good seats, because there's a number of Republicans, even with the redistricting that's going on, there's a number of Republicans in districts who are complete and whacks that don't represent these districts at all, and won in the wave of 2010 and are easily taken out. And then in a few of those districts, not as many as we'd like, we got really progressive Democrats going up against them. So, you know, that's the whole thing. I'd be shocked if we took the House back. At the same time, I could see us picking up 20 seats and getting a lot closer. And we just have to hope the majority of those go to people that are, you know, of our ilk,
right?
You know,
right. Hope springs eternal.
That's exactly it, man.
Hope
baby.
Has returned to the
hope and change. That's the motto of your show,
indeed.
The Majority Report. Hope and change.
Hope and change. Well, Cliff Schechter, thanks so much for joining us a day early. Let's hope that between now, Thursday night, and Friday afternoon or Friday at noontime, the Mitt Romney has not even imploded any further. I'm not sure how that could happen, but
rendering our analysis completely useless, because
right.
He's at that point said that Nigeria is run by the Queen of England.
He's going to step aside and allow Herman Cain to take over the reins.
Oh, man. And to think we thought we'd have fun if Herman Cain was the nominee.
Indeed. Well, safe travels. We'll talk
thanks,
to you next
man.
Week. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks, buddy. Take it easy.
You too. All right, ladies and gentlemen. You know, the way to end that would have been to come in with the Herman Cain song. Poor Matt. Poor, poor Matt. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to remind you, StrangeAngels.com, which has been sponsoring this show all this month, handing out, at this point, we have six more free one-month trials where you, as a Majority Report listener, if you're interested in trying out the better half of the program, StrangeAngels.com is basically sponsoring you to do it. And they are a online matchmaking dating site, I guess, where you're basically, it's not an algorithm. It's not like this eHarmony thing where they decide, well, you know what, we don't believe in same-sex unions or same-sex hookups or whatever. I don't know what eHarmony, what they do. I've always perceived that as being a little more, is it like Christian? Is it like a Christian thing? I'm not saying there's anything
it's
wrong
kinda,
with that.
It's kind of waspy, actually. If you ask
no,
me.
But I thought there was something like explicitly like, okay, well.
I think it may be Match.com, but one of those sites was the guy who found that it was affiliated with James Dobson, but he dissociated himself.
Not Match. I don't think it was Match.
No, I don't know anything about those
the
sites.
The point is, look, it's not an algorithm. Real people do it, and they're having a live event in Brooklyn Sunday night. Williamsburg, just check out strangeangels.com for more information. And if you want one of those, what did I just say, six remaining 1 month free trial memberships. We still have six left. And so send in an email. Just put in the subject line, strangeangels.com, free trial membership for the Majority Report, and check out strangeangels.com. Also, I want to also mention on Monday, I don't know how this happened, but, you know, we did last week, we were talking about Rand Paul was on one of those Sunday shows with Paul Krugman. Rand Paul didn't seem to know that the number of government employees had decreased by 600,000 employees across the country. And some guy tweeted me saying, like, what is it? I have the tweets right here. Something like, hey, you're an idiot. You don't know what you're talking about. And you have no journalistic integrity. Because Rand Paul was just talking about federal employees, or I don't know what the argument is. I got to dig into it a little bit. But, and so I looked at this, and it turns out, and so I retweeted it. Turns out this guy is running for Congress in New York's 7th District. And so I retweeted this. The guy's, in addition to being wrong, and then he deleted the tweets because he didn't know that I was going to tell everybody that he had tweeted me or something to that effect.
If, you're running for office, calling people an idiot isn't usually the best thing to go
about. Well, I don't know. He said this is what he wrote. Then he tweeted me back. He said, I deleted them because I did not know that all of my comments to you would be viewed by all. So, all right. So I tweeted out, just FYI, if you're running for office and you call me an idiot, I probably will retweet that. And so I said, well, if you'd like to come on and debate me on any of these topics, I'll have you on the program. So on Monday, his name is Dan O'Connor. He is running for the 7th District seat in New York City. I think it's Brooklyn, Southern Manhattan. And he's going to call in. We're going to have a debate on some of this stuff. I'm not sure what it is, but you know how I love to debate libertarians. And I don't, maybe if I win this debate, do I get, I don't get to be the congressperson, right? From the 7th District.
No.
Okay. All right, I just want to double check on that. I mean, that would have been...
Maybe he'll put some gold bars on the line, though.
I don't know. You're suggesting that he's a gold bug of sorts?
Aren't they all?
I don't know. Well, I guess we'll find out. So you make sure you want to tune in for that on Monday. And we're going to have another guest on Monday. I'm not sure who it's going to be. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Matthew, a film guy. Running late today, but that's all right. We'll be right back.
I can't walk the streets now. Chicago laid my mind. I still put him on my sea stars. Breaking down, stop breaking down.
Somebody's a little rusty, a little Friday rusty. Matt forgot to play We Are the Majority. But I guess that'll happen. And you also forgot to play Matthew Film Guy's theme song. Unbelievable.
Oh, man. He hasn't been on forever, though.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going on until I hear it.
I know. You shouldn't. I'll just tell people right now. This segment, because my family does not let me go out and see movies, I can only watch movies via Netflix or on Amazon streaming, or I guess also on my Roku. I can see like Crackle, but I don't even know what that's all about. And so I have people on to give me a suggestion. You can't even find it?
Can't find it.
Are you serious?
Matt, you're letting me down here. Come on.
I'm sorry.
We had a problem. I opened up the Sinclair. I replaced the Sinclair's hard drive, and then we turned on the Sinclair, and then we found out the problem was a fan inside the computer. So we have a problem.
Matt, it's Command F, and then you can type in.
No, I know. I am looking for it.
Okay.
And I don't have it on mine because I'm using, you know, a different. This is embarrassing, Matthew. And
for us all, really.
I feel bad about this. The only thing I can tell. How about this? This is what I'm going to do for you. Okay, you ready?
Yeah, I've got it. Okay, go ahead.
The beautiful Isabel Gillies is gonna take us to the movies. She'll tell Sam what's good on the streaming video.
I get her. I can't even hear that. It's on my computer. I can't even do an impression. I won't even try.
All right, so there you go. We gave you the Isabel Gillies intro. Not even the Jimmy Reefer Cake one, but the one from the Croup. The Crooper. Yeah, a little bit, almost too soulful. Like, I hope nothing. So, Matthew, last time you were on the program, and it's been a while because, you know, we've taken a couple Fridays off. And, you know, we had people like Kindler showing up. And
yeah, that was great.
You got bigfooted. And you suggested to me to watch Elite Squad. I told you that I really was in the mood. Like, I want to see some good action movies. There's no good action movies that are put out there. You know, like smart ones.
Right.
And you suggested to me Elite Squad, and then Elite Squad 2.
Right.
And just remind everybody, who is the filmmaker? Because I don't remember.
The director of Elite Squad is Jose Padilla.
What?
I think that's how you spell his last name. Jose Padilla.
Are you serious?
Brazilian dude.
I don't think it's Jose Padilla. Jose Padilla was the guy who was arrested for supposedly, you know, a dirty bomb, and then he was basically tortured. U.S.
Right. I'm not sure how that guy spelled his name, but this guy spells it P-A-D-I-L-H-A. So maybe with the Brazilian pronunciation, it's a little different.
All right.
But that's him.
Fair enough. So, and this is in... this is obviously it's
Rio.
Subtitled, and it is. I ended up having Netflix was streaming Elite Squad 2.
Right.
So I watched that first.
And right. Then, I gave you the heads up, but it's all right.
Oh, and then I found it on Amazon streaming, Elite Squad 1.
Part 1.
And so I watched that second.
So what was that like watching him out of order? Because you get to know his family life a little bit in the first one, and you sort of see it crumble apart in the second. But were you into it?
Yeah, no, it stood up definitely. It's definitely stood up in both instances. I mean, I probably would have had a better sense of what was going on early on, but you know, I'm not that.
Right.
I'm pretty up on the uptake, and I thought they were both great movies. I mean, I think you know. Sadly, Elite Squad 2, a little bit at the end, it was a little bit convenient. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't like it where all the corrupt people actually lose.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that happens that much in reality.
It had just a bit of a too happy of an ending, you're saying.
It's a little bit deus ex machina.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
Yep, I understand completely. But, I mean, they drag you through hell for about 90% of the movie that I guess he just lost the courage of his convictions at the end there.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the end there it all sort of is, like, nice and it wraps up sort of cleanly and, there, you know, it's a little bit more hopeful. But, you know,
I mean, dozens of people are dead. You know, you're still in total squalor if you're living in the favelas. But, yeah, I see how you can put that through the main character's eyes. You get some revenge.
Right. And that's the thing is that, you know, that's the way that movies work, right? It's like all the people who are living in squalor, the people who are dead, they were just, you know, moments that took place in the film. You never, you're left. The emotional impact of the film is just a function of what the protagonist does.
That's right. But my main question for you is, as I had sort of highlighted in my original introduction to this movie,
Matthew. You're getting testy about this, all right?
Something about talking to you.
Why don't you let me direct the conversation? And if it's just not going to where you go, then you just say something. But don't get testy with me about it.
Okay, Sam. Okay, sure. Go ahead. The floor is yours.
No. Go ahead with what you're saying. I'm just saying.
No. You obviously had a place you wanted it to go. So please don't let me step on your toes.
I'm happy to go there. I'm like picking up a little bit of testiness in your. Do we need a?
I did mention to you that you had to go to Amazon to get part one.
Just hold on for 1 second.
Yeah. I can't hear what you're playing. I'm not getting any audio.
Okay. All right. Forget it. We just played your theme song. I don't know why.
Thank goodness.
Why is it sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't?
You should hear it. There's no reason you shouldn't.
No, it would be a different dial. I don't know. Sometimes. All right. So. Matthew. So what? Now get back to the point that you originally had. Come on now.
All right. I feel a lot better now that I had my theme song played. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Matt.
You're
very welcome.
Seeing as I had to just email it to you while I was on the phone, but that's okay. That's not the point. The point is that it got played.
Dude, I thought we were just going to get past this. Come on.
It'll take me a second. But what I really was interested in is seeing if you, Sam Cedar, bastion of liberal values, found yourself rooting against the sort of namby-pamby liberal elite professor who clearly had no idea what was happening in the favelas for real.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, are you kidding? I mean,
I want to hear you talk about that.
Well, all right. Look, first off, let me just say this. This movie was essentially Dirty Harry, right? I mean,
right.
That's what it is. It is the classic, and really basically the best Westerns are just repeats, the best war movies, the best, this is Dirty Harry. Instead of one cop, it is sort of, it's an elite squad. But all the other, you know, you've got the bureaucrats and the corruptness, more or less, in the broader force. And then you've got the sort of like namby-pamby liberals who are like, you shouldn't be whatever it is, you know, like if everybody should be on welfare, 47%, whatever it is. And these guys are taking out the bad guys. I mean, look, I,
did it give you pause? Did you have to, swallow some principle to enjoy this movie? I mean, basically what I'm asking is, do you think in general it's important for liberals to be in touch with their own sort of fascistic impulses? Because they're human to have those impulses. And maybe, you know, the only difference between us and a Republican is that our mixture is like higher in the liberal sense and lower in the conservative sense. But don't you think that it's important that we don't repress those urges, but understand them and make connection to them?
You know what I thought was cool was those guns were just like, bam, bam, bam.
There you go.
No.
There you go. Exactly.
Well, look.
They are.
I think the indictment of those people wasn't so much that they were just sort of liberals, but it was also that they were sort of out of touch.
They're in Ivy Tower.
Yeah.
What do you call it?
And it really was
Ivory.
I mean, I think that they're, I mean, look, obviously these things get simplified in the context of a movie, and maybe it does bear some element of reality, but
right.
You know, I think
the liberals in Brazil can't be that stupid either.
No, I mean, yeah, you know, are there instances where there is sort of establishment liberal sort of like blindness to certain phenomena? Yes. I mean, yes, mm-hmm. you know, but you got to draw these mm-hmm. characters sort of broadly. You know, this guy, I like the fact that, you know, he was just sort of he was the things that made him capable in the street basically destroyed every other aspect of his life.
Right.
But, you know, it was just sort of like a little bit too convenient, all the corruption. you know what I mean?
Right.
Like the corruption. Sure. Like there was a lack of nuance. Like the idea is, that, you know,
of course.
The idea with this is that it's supposed to tell a nuanced style, a nuanced picture of the sort of dynamics that happen. But in fact, it was not very nuanced. Like, you know, compare this to sort of something like The Wire, for instance.
Exactly, right? Which is a popular comparison. But yes, it's lacking that sort of sophistication a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, sure. I don't mind the, you know, I'm not like, I wasn't sitting there watching the TV going like, that's not right to depict those liberals that way.
Like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, that's, I can,
right.
you know, I'm not that heavily invested in it. I just,
right.
I like the action. I like the fact that it was, you know, thoughtful, at least in terms of a character study of this guy. And I found them very satisfying. You know, I went and watched number one after seeing number two. I thought number one was actually even a little better in that respect, which mm-hmm. is sort of inevitable. You know, I liked how number two ended, you know, but there was also that quality of like, you know, the X-Men. You know, like in the end, you always have that like last 3 minutes where everything is just like, phew, everybody got their just desserts.
Yeah.
And
But
great movie. I would recommend it to anybody who likes action movies. I would have never, even for a moment, asked Nikki to watch it because she just would have been like, no way, too much shooting.
No way.
But you got another one of those, buddy? I'm all in.
Well, okay, so now I'm on the scent of what it is that you'll actually watch. I mean, I thought I would take this movie recommendation.
I've watched some of your other movies. Don't get, you know, you're being like those liberals in Rio. You got this attitude, buddy. Come down from your
You got to remember, you got to foreign films and art films have rights too. You know, you can't just only watch action movies. But that's okay because I like action
movies.
This
was
too.
A foreign film. These were both foreign films. And I'll also
I know,
have you
that's
know
why it was like
that
a
Ronin,
crossover.
For instance, was done with mostly foreign money.
Well, yeah,
in fact,
all of
your foreign films now, all of your action films are done mostly with foreign money. And this is the other
that's
thing
true.
That I realized. Like, if, you know, generally, having a foreign film limits my ability to watch it because I'm watching, you know, late at night after Nikki goes to sleep and I'm tired and I'm going to fall asleep. But action films, not as much dialogue. And so it's sort of a seamless experience.
Okay. Well, this one might be a challenge for you. I don't, you know, I may have heard you mention it or someone mentioned it to you.
Why do you got to put it that way, dude?
Because I'm setting myself up here. Have you seen Drive?
That Canadian one? Wait, what
it's
is
It's not
Drive?
Canadian. He's
is this a new
Drive?
Crash.
It has Albert, where Albert Brooks plays the bad guy.
What? No.
Okay.
Is this a new
You're
movie?
Ready. You're ready for this? Yeah, it's recently new. It's on Netflix streaming now.
Drive.
And
is it good?
Drive. Yes. Now
is this
it's
Ryan Gosling?
A lot of flack for being. Huh?
Ryan Gosling.
Ryan Gosling, exactly.
Who is this
it's
guy?
Got,
I only know him from somebody has a Twitter account, Paul Ryan Gosling.
He's a very good-looking actor.
Okay. Was he in...
He's a good-looking actor.
It's not Ryan
he's been
Reynolds.
A bunch.
No, that's a different actor.
I knew that dude
that's
back
good,
in
that's
the day.
That's the Green Lantern.
He's
the Green Lantern.
He's a good actor.
Wait, Ryan Reynolds is in the Green Lantern?
He is the Green Lantern.
Yeah,
he is?
He's the Green Lantern.
Did that come out
yet?
Yeah, but it was really bad.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah,
I
would not I
had dinner drinks with Ryan Reynolds back in the day when I used to hang with Galecki a little bit and... It's Naked Gun Friday. Johnny Galecki and I used to hang a little bit.
Okay.
And, you know, we did Ryan Reynolds, one of those guys. He was like on Two Men and a Baby or Three Men and a Girl in a Restaurant or something. I can't remember the name of the sitcom.
Two Guys, a Girl in a Pizza Place?
Yeah, maybe that's what it was.
I don't know if he was in that.
Well, then you're going to love Ryan Gosling.
Okay, all right, so I'm going to love Ryan Gosling. Do not know him, I should say.
Okay, he's in a lot of movies. He was in The Ides of March. I don't know if you've seen that. That was
I do want to see that. Is that one good too?
I haven't actually seen that one yet. So I assume from the trailer that you'll like it, but that's, I can't go there.
Wait, Matt.
Ides of March.
Drive is sort of an arty sort of genre film.
Okay.
It's
C-Drive.
It's gotten some
sort of like you
being very slow.
You're sort of like an arty genre film guy.
Thank you. That's one of the nicest things you've ever said to me, Sam.
All right. You're welcome.
But it's got some really great performances by Albert Brooks and Bryan Cranston of Breaking Bad.
Sold.
And it's got hyper violent passages, but
sold.
Also a lot of very slow and sort of ponderous sort of art film esque takes on genre film.
You've just explained my life, buddy.
Yeah.
Just moments of extreme violence interspersed with sort of like artsy sort of like internal thought. That's basically
poetic passages.
That's right. Like I'm like, that's like my average day. I'm walking down the street in New York City. I'm just sort of thinking sort of arty internal things. And some guy moves his car in front of me and all of a sudden it turns into like a very violent version of that scene in Midnight Cowboy.
I'm walking here, right?
Right.
All right. Well, then, Drive is the movie for you. I can't wait to hear what you take of out of Albert Brooks, your hero. It's a really dark performance in it. He's fantastic. It got a lot of crap for being sort of slow for an action movie, but it's violent for an art movie.
To heck with those people.
I think you're going to be into it.
To heck with those people.
They're not relevant. So there you go.
Fantastic. I love it. Well, sold. Matthew Film Guy comes up with another winner, ladies and gentlemen. This is, I got to say, pretty impressive. You've been doing pretty good so far.
Once I started tuning my frequency.
That's enough of that.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
How's everything else going? We haven't seen each other in a long time, Matthew.
Going well. I'm doing a lot of work as an editor, so I'm keeping really busy. I just edited a short film that's hopefully going to be playing some festivals. So I'm getting out there, doing my thing.
I love it.
About to go to Cancun with Mary for a vacation, so that'll be fun.
You guys engaged yet or what?
You know, we're on the road. We're on the road to engagement.
Well, you've been that road has been a long road, dude.
I know. It's a long and winding road, but you know what? We go at our own pace, and we're happy.
Hmm. Sounds like trouble in paradise. All right. Well, Matthew.
You should know, Sam. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. You should tell me about it. All right. Well,
I know.
No, you don't have to tell me about it. I know about it. All right.
You know all about it. You're the master.
Oh, yeah. It's true. Nobody has more trouble in paradise than I do. All right.
I know. You're my inspiration in that sense. But anyway, thank you, Sam.
Matthew Film Guy, ladies and gentlemen. Great job. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, what are we doing today?
Want to do a freebie?
Freebie? All right, we'll do a freebie Friday. Why not? Freebie Friday, ladies and gentlemen. You know what? I'll tell you what. Somebody should be sending us some music for a freebie Friday so that we can actually play it. You know what I'm saying? Like
someone create a Freebie Friday theme song.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be a theme song. It can be a sting. Like, Freebie Friday!
Jeremo, if you're listening.
Does he do audio stuff?
I don't know. Could you imagine his voice? That would be great.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that would be great. Maybe it would be great. I don't want to, who knows? Could be great, may not be great. All right, the number is 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. If you want to be a part of the program, I will get to your IMs in just a moment at Majority FM. You can IM me if you do not have an AOL client at majorityfmjabber.org, jabber.org. Let's start off here with this Fox and Friends thing. Unbelievable to me.
So, you know, maybe you've been living under a rock, but Mitt Romney's been imploding the past week. I mean, it really was just a matter of time. And we have a clip from Ann Romney where, you know, I feel badly. I feel badly a little bit, But I know that in a couple months they're going to be just fine. They're going to be just fine. But Fox and Friends, desperate to change the topic, how would you do it? If Mitt Romney had put his foot in his mouth, got involved in this whole U.S. embassy thing, if you knew that this tape was floating around about Mitt Romney, if there was something, what could you possibly do to distract? Well, of course, you would try and blow up this notion that somehow President Obama is throwing Israel under the bus, being rude to Bibi Netanyahu. How could he? Well, here's Fox and Friends telling us the story.
Right. All right. Looks like Middle East peace will have to wait. The president says he's got no time to meet with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, but meeting with a pirate, no problem. And I'm not talking a Pittsburgh pirate, which makes a lot more sense.
He could be from Pittsburgh.
That's true.
Wouldn't it be funny if the pirate came out of that car?
That would be interesting. But I haven't seen a pirate in a long time.
I know, but he's busy at the White House.
Now,
apparently.
Pause it for a second. Understand that they're showing a picture of President Obama sitting down. You know, the classic picture where he's talking to foreign leaders, but he's talking to a guy dressed as a pirate because...
Like an R, maybe.
R, yeah. Like, a, you know, like an old, like, a, you know, like a... Keep playing him.
I got to hear more about that story because it doesn't totally seem to gel. But anyway, the president doesn't have time for Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, but has an Oval Office sit down with a guy dressed as a pirate. I got to hear more about
that. I don't know if he's dressed as a pirate. Now, this is a compilation. Throughout the day, they're doing this. So this is already where I mentioned three. Keep going.
Pirate. Sorry to hear what happened to his hand. The president says he's got no time to meet with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. But the pirate got in. Not a problem.
Ah, yeah. Time for a shot of the morning. And it's a quick look at what President Obama's been up to. Arg. Here he is, sitting down with the pirate, making sure he didn't forget to mark International Talk Like a Pirate Day. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu still waiting for that president meeting with Mr. Obama. Remember, the White House said that President Obama was simply too busy to sit down with him. As you can see right there, he's getting the Clint Eastwood treatment. Also, I feel kind of bad that we missed Talk Like a Pirate Day yesterday.
Okay, all right. Look, that's six. They go on. It's like 7, 8, 9, 10. So this is a major scandal, obviously, at Fox and Friends. I mean, because you're talking about President Obama not having the time to meet with Bibi Netanyahu a month out from an election, and probably not wanting to, but saying that it's no time. But he has time to meet with a pirate. Unbelievable. This is the man that David Gregory said was king of the Jews. Isn't that what Bibi Netanyahu was? King of the Jews?
I think it was leader of the Jews.
Leader of the Jews.
King of the Jews sounds pretty impressive, Sam.
Whatever. Leader of the Jews, president of the Jews, king of the Jews. It doesn't matter. And Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, meeting instead with a pirate. I am just... It's almost impossible to imagine this could be the case. Oh, what's this coming through my Twitter feed? On September 20th, is that what it was? Yeah. From Fox and Friends. I only have Fox and Friends on my Twitter feed. So when something comes up, I can see it almost immediately. The picture we aired this morning of the president and the pirate was from 2009. Just no, sorry, no, oh, correction, no. Hey, all those people who listen to Fox and Friends are now going around and telling their buddies and everyone at the shul, you know, if the leader that the leader of the Jews was snubbed for a pirate, you should know that only in the sense that he met with a pirate 3 years ago and not in the sense that he met with a pirate instead of meeting with Bibi Netanyahu. So
we were very...
Fox and Friends would say are bad, but they're not really even saying that. They're just going like, just wanted to let you know, 2009.
Are bad.
Are bad. Unbelievable.
Wow.
So meanwhile, and I'll get to your phone calls in just a moment, folks. Just have a little patience. We'll be right with you because another sign that the Romneys are really, really are really having a tough go of it. I mentioned at the top of the show, here is, well, I don't know what to say about this. Here is Ann Romney being interviewed, I believe, on what local station was it?
I'm not even sure.
Okay, she was interviewed on a local station somewhere.
It was in Iowa.
In Iowa.
I don't know the name of the station, but in Iowa.
And understand what's happening now. You've got guys like Tommy Thompson, like I mentioned earlier, is now blaming Romney. You've got Tim Pawlenty, Romney's one of his co-chairs, basically saying like, you know, should I take this job or should I wait 6 weeks and take, you know, F Romney. I'm going to just take this job because I'm not going to, what's the value in me being associated with this losing campaign? Paul Ryan, it seems like, I think he's gone underground, probably somewhere going like, why in the world am I the only one going out and campaigning? Mitt Romney seems to have already gone on vacation. So they're having a tough time of it. But here's Ann Romney expressing, or at least subtextually, just how much of a tough time they're having.
It's one thing to be criticized by the other side, but recently there have been criticism.
This is the interviewer, and she's talking about you getting criticized by Republicans now.
Criticism from fellow Republicans, Peggy Noonan saying time for an intervention, Bill Kristol saying things like arrogant and stupid. I mean, what do you say to your fellow Republicans who are...
Stop it. This is hard. You want to try it? Get in the ring. This is hard. And, you know, it's an important thing that we're doing right now, and it's an important election. And it is time for all Americans to realize how significant this election is and how lucky we are to have someone with qualifications and experience and know-how to be able to have the opportunity to run this country.
You people do not know how lucky you are. Not the Republicans, not the poor people, not the 40, all you bloodsuckers, parasites. You don't really realize the blessing that God has given you, the opportunity to vote for Mitt Romney. I love this part where she's saying basically to the other people, like, you know, stop, play where she says, stop it. You don't like it. Jump in the ring.
It's one thing to be criticized by the other side, but recently there have been criticism from fellow Republicans, Peggy Noonan saying time for an intervention, Bill Kristol saying things like arrogant and stupid. I mean, what do you say to your fellow Republicans who are...
Stop it. This is hard. You want to try it? Get in the ring.
Get in the ring. Let's hear it.
Let's get ready to rumble.
This is where she did a great impersonation of that. That's where the pounding music come in. So there it is. The Romneys are having a tough go of it. I've got to admit, I feel some sympathy for them because they're really going to go down as one of the greatest laughing stocks, I think, in the history of presidential elections. And, you know, I guess I don't feel that badly for them. I mean, I think they're going to be fine. So, yeah, scratch that.
They're just really, really bad at this.
Yeah. Now, the other fallout, we've talked about how hard this is on Ann Romney. We talked about how hard this is on Mitt. We can only imagine how difficult it is for Tripp and Trag and Matt and Ed and Kevin and all the other Romney boys Kai and Germo. I don't know what the names of all the Romney kids are, but I mean, I feel bad for him. No, I don't really feel bad for him, but just for the sake of argument, I feel bad for him. You know who else it's going to hurt? It's also going to hurt Paul Ryan. And here he is and this is encouraging, at the AARP in New Orleans, because there has been really a lot of questions as to whether or not the American Association of Retired People hasn't been a force for cutting Social Security and cutting Medicare, because they sell insurance. So they have some investment in less public services so that they can step in and privatize off it. So here is Paul Ryan talking about wanting to repeal Obamacare to supposedly strengthen Medicare. I'm not sure these folks are buying it. This is in New Orleans.
To a stronger Medicare is to repeal Obamacare, because it represents the worst of both worlds. I had a feeling there would be mixed reaction, so let me get into it. It weakens Medicare for today's seniors and puts it at risk for the next generation. First, it funnels $716 billion out of Medicare to pay for a new entitlement we didn't even ask for. Second,
it doesn't really seem like it's that mixed to me. In addition to him lying, look, the $760 billion, and nobody's more uptight about cutting Medicare than I am. The $760 billion basically went into cost savings and was shifted into about one-third of it, one-fourth of it was basically cutting back on providers in Medicare Advantage, because Medicare Advantage is sort of a quasi-privatized part of Medicare. And they found that despite the fact they did this as an experiment to see if it would drive down costs, it was actually raising costs by 20%. So they basically said to the providers, you've got to meet and match Medicare expenses. So they cut that out of the program, and then they shifted some of this other money into essentially Medicaid and providing services through the Affordable Care Act, which is basically an expansion of Medicare in some respects, closing the donut hole, Medicare Part D. So he's lying, but that's not really the story here. The story here is that I like the AARP hearing its members saying, boo, don't cut Medicare. You're going to have a problem with us. Let's go to the phones. This is Jeremo. Is this Jeremo?
Sam, great show today.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you.
Good laugh. Sammy, real quick, I got two things. First of all, a movie. I wanted to tell you about a movie I really like, and I'm going to give you a little tease.
Okay.
See if you can answer the questions for me. Ready?
Okay.
She was the only. She starred in this movie. She produced it. She directed it. She wrote it.
Okay.
And it was in the 1980s, maybe, yeah, 1980s. She starred in it, wrote it, produced it, and directed it. She was also in one of the most famous movies in the 70s.
Wow. He got me, dude.
I got you? I don't believe it. As soon as I say it, you're going to...
Is this in the 70s?
Yeah, well, maybe I could be wrong. I could be wrong. Maybe it was
all
the
right,
80s.
Well, who is it?
Anne Bancroft.
Oh, all right.
And the movie is
no idea. Fatso.
Fatso.
With Dom DeLuise.
Yeah, Dom DeLuise. That's my best movie.
It was a little bit before my time, but I'll check it out.
Oh, maybe that's what it is. All right. I got the second thing, real quick.
Yeah.
Sammy.
Yeah.
When did you say Romney cannot be elected? Because the Southern whites don't like Mormons.
Well, I said that a long time ago, but I don't think that's his only problem now.
You said that in January, around January.
Yeah,
I haven't documented.
I don't think
that was the.
I think that's hurting him, but I don't think that's his only problem. But
well, no. You said that in January, and what happened was you were slightly rocked by the Supreme Court decision on corporations being able to donate money to campaigns. You were slightly rocked, but you still said he's not going to get elected. He's not going to get elected.
Oh, yeah,
a lot of people were saying it's over.
No, I knew he wasn't getting elected.
I'm wrong. No, you said that he wasn't going to be elected.
That's what I'm agreeing with you, Jeremo.
I know. Oh, good, great, great, great. We see, terrific. Terrific. Great show. Thanks a million.
Thanks for calling in, buddy. Appreciate it.
You guys are good. Take care. Bye,
bye,
Sammy.
Let's go to Diane, calling from Southern Oregon. Welcome to the program, Diane. Diana.
Hi, Sam.
How are you?
Hi. I'm fine. We produced a website, the Hold Your Nose and Vote Obama 2012.com,
yes,
that you did an ad for us on Ring of Fire.
Indeed.
Indeed. Did you get a chance at all to look at our website?
I haven't had over. Oh, I think I did actually a while back. I think you've told me about this before, haven't you?
Well, yeah, and we actually, it was very much a bare bones website initially, and then we hired someone who basically could take our content and make it into a website. So it's vastly different from what it was
a
year ago.
It's Hold Your Nose and VoteObama.com? What is it?
Obama 2012. Hold Your Nose and Vote Obama2012.com.
Okay.
And so we were wondering if we could maybe sponsor you in October for 100 1-month memberships, if that would be something that you would think about.
I'll tell you what. Send me an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com.
Okay. We actually, in the past, we've done that and we didn't get responses, and so that's why. And I also
Diana, I don't want to have this conversation on air because it's not really interesting
that's fine.
For anybody. Send me an email.
I actually wanted to talk to you about the content of the site. Is what I had tried to call about a couple of weeks ago, because at that time my father really feels that I shouldn't have even done it. He thinks that you shouldn't in any way jeopardize Obama's chances.
I don't know that it's jeopardizing Obama's chances. I mean, you're telling people to hold your nose and vote. You have a constituency of people who have questions about whether or not they should vote for Obama. And, I think it's...
Basically...
Go ahead.
It's mostly directed at people who... It's funny because where we... directed at people who we think may sit it out because they are informed. That was the original thought. We about a year after he came into office, we had our Obama stickers still on our car. And when he wouldn't pursue anyone for torture, I went out and taped on top of my bumper sticker, complicit on torture. I think Glenn Greenwald used that phrase. And so for the last 3 years, I've been driving around with that. And then we created this logo in this impotence of feeling so powerless,
right,
where of the rising sun was instead of the rays of the sun, we substituted the yellow clothespins. But in doing the website, and just wearing the few T-shirts that we buy, it's been interesting in terms of engaging people, because there's kind of a lot people are confused in terms of why so many people are so poorly informed. They don't understand why anyone would be frustrated with Obama. And I think when I was putting the website together a couple of weeks ago, I was really trying to make it a place where you could send people who are not well informed, who are kind of baffled at how you could have this much hostility with Obama. And to be frank, the easiest of all the components on the website, torture and whistleblowers and the kill list, the one that is the easiest to get across to people is the section on Michael Vick. And because I think the people who can't get their brain around why we're frustrated, they tend to be gentle-spirited people who want to see the good in people. And I think that's one of the key problems for liberals, is that gentle-spirited people cannot get their brains around the ugliness that goes on and what people are capable of. I had called you about a year ago and talked about the University of Pennsylvania scandal, and I was an emergency physician who was fired for, quote, my refusal to be cost-effective. And you had talked about how at Air America they had said you weren't a team player because I brought up my great frustration with team players. And I think this sort of plays into it to me, this whole idea that that the team player themes play into this website as to why it's so important not to be a team player. We cite Glenn Ford talking about him being a more effective evil. But when I try to engage people, the quickest way to really just stop them in their tracks is to talk about this Michael Vick thing.
That's interesting. I mean, because you know what? In a million years, when I think of the problems I have with the Obama administration, in a million years, Michael Vick doesn't even come to mind for me. I mean,
I would beg you to look at the first, look at that section, because
I just clicked
honest,
on it. It was really disturbing. It was really disturbing.
Yes.
But you
it's
know, I mean,
very
look,
disturbing. We I don't mean, want to think about the reality.
I mean, it's
what he was doing.
Yes. But I think that, the President Obama does not have a policy in terms of dogfighting. And the idea that he would come out, and I honestly don't even remember it. The idea that he would, you know, in any way be supportive is really just a function of crass politics. And for me, the issue is not Obama the person. And the idea that, if it's effective, that's fine. But the issue to me is not that. Because that to me is not what the president's not, you know, that's not his job, in my estimation.
But, remember when you talked about the incidence of sociopathy on Wall Street? And there they always talk about sociopathic behavior. People tend to start with cruelty to animals, and then it goes right into cruelty to people. This inability to have empathy is extremely important. The reason you can cut Social Security on the elderly is the same thing. For me, it was... Because people can make excuses about why he didn't pursue, why he didn't honor the UN Convention on Torture, a treaty that we are obligated as a nation to honor. This reason a constitutional law professor would turn his back on a treaty that we signed, that Reagan signed in '88. It all dovetails together, this lack of empathy. And, FDR always had Fala at his side. Of course, Hitler liked his beagle, his dogs, too. It made me think, as I was researching it, remember how LBJ lifted his dog, his beagle, up by his ears?
Yeah.
Remember, they made a huge deal of it at the time. And we, as a nation, made Michael Vick Player of the Year and gave him a $100 million contract the year after he got out of jail. They electrocuted these dogs, they hanged them, they body slammed them to death. I mean, it's brutal. And when the president, he's still sending him tips. That's the last part of the drop-down on that thing, is he's still sending Michael Vick tips. That's telling other people it ain't that big of a deal. And that impacts dogs. The problem is, we still start with Butt Romney's worst. And Romney,
right. I see the point you're making. And if it's effective in making people more conscious of these other issues, then great. To me, that is a sort of like let me put it this way. If President Obama, sent an email or whatever, or tips or whatever it is that he's sending to Michael Vick, but actually pursued. Now, your argument is this is indicative of the reason why he doesn't do these things. I am less interested in the psychological makeup. There's value in talking about it at times, but at the end of the day, I'm more interested in the policies that he's using or not, that he's forwarding.
I think they all dovetail together.
Well, I understand that. I understand where you perceive them dovetailing.
There's a consistency there.
But I understand that. I understand that. But
the whistleblowers, the ability to send.
I get what you're saying. But I think that it is. At the end of the day, I think it is, if President Obama, if you're saying that President Obama could never protect Social Security because of something psychological in him when it comes to Michael Vick. I don't know. I mean, it's an opinion, but it gets into a realm that is irrelevant to me, because I don't care if in his heart he is one way. It doesn't make a difference whether or not he's a really good person or he's not a good person. I'm looking for the Obama administration to pursue certain policies, and there is no.
I think that we as liberals, because we don't get our minds around what people are capable of, that's one of the main reasons we get outmaneuvered. The good people just can't get their brains around what people are capable of. As a physician, I was a physician who was fired from my.
All right, listen, Diana, I gotta jump because send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We can talk about this.
Sure.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. It is hold your nose and vote Obama2012.com. Kevin 11721, on this day, 1780, wealthy general Benedict Arnold meets with British to hand over West Point for money and high British army position. Oh, incidentally, breaking, Mitt Romney releasing his 2011 tax returns at 3 p.m. today. Yeah. What's the theory here, that it's going to get people to stop talking about what? Hey, he is so bad, right? I mean, why even bother at this point? Attention, NYC peons. Your Likudnik king loves him some austerity. Bloomberg's austerity plans. Oh, my God. Mitt Romney paid $1.936 million in taxes in 2011 on $13.697 million in income. So $2 million on $13.5 million. So he's, what is that, about, well, I guess around 13, 14%, right? 15% off the top of my head. Anti-Islamic advertisements in New York City coming via Pam Geller again. Apartheid school segregation in New York. A full 15% of African American students and 14% of Latino students are attending apartheid schools.
It was a 14.1% tax rate.
Okay. Apartheid schools segregation in California. Huh. Let's hope the IDF stops and frisks their parents when dropping off. Teabagger Party threatens revenge against Pennsylvania justice for not upholding the voter ID law. Well, that's lovely. Now that Romney has imploded, Netanyahu headed to the White House to strong arm and guilt Obama into doing his bloodthirsty evil bidding. Limbaugh, penis is now 10% smaller and shrinking because of feminazis. As Italy sentences 23 CIA agents in rendition case, Obama refused to prosecute anybody for torture. Obama's bloodlust knows no bounds. Transplants his head Afghan military murderer to Africa. Romney effective tax rate, 14.1%. There's holes in Romney's BS return. Donated $4 million to charity, 30% of income. Let's see, Dyson 9, that doesn't look right. Clausen, Clower, hey Sam, Voodoo is now on Roku too. And if you go to gowatchit.com, you can search any film and see which sites it's on. Oh, great, thank you. Voodoo. Kyle, so when is the next marathon show and will it be 24 hours this time? Maybe we'll do one in, what was it? November 17th, right? Maybe we'll do one. I don't know. Kyle, I also don't want a Bigfoot Matthew film guy, but I just proposed to Amy. Whoa! Congratulations!
Congratulations!
Just now, in between those two IMs? Hold on, Amy, hold on for one second. I've gotta ask Sam when the marathon show is. Okay. I probably got some time before he responds. Hold on for one second, Amy. Would you sit down for a moment? How did you do it?
Quick, I have to Bigfoot Matthew film guy. Let me do this quick.
Will you? Oh, wait a second. I gotta slam Matthew. Where is it?
Wait, did we even get an answer? Well, we could be going on, and she could have been like, no.
He just had to do it immediately when he heard Matthew say it. What did she say? Happened last week. Why didn't she say anything? She said yes? Seriously?
That's shocking.
Did you ask her multiple questions at the same time? Are you hungry? Do you want to get married? Yes. No, yes? No. I mean, yes, I was. Okay, whatever. Congratulations, Kyle.
Did you do something geeky, like ask her through JavaScript or something?
Yeah.
Like, did like a pop-up window show up on her screen?
Click here if you want to get married. Congratulations. I also asked, hey, do you know this Matthew film guy? He's a shithead for not proposing, right? Do you want to marry me? Gateron watched Drive twice in a row. Mitt admitted in January debate to Newt that if his plan to eliminate capital gains of 15%, he would not have paid any taxes in the last 2 years. Therefore, none of his income could be wages, so he is part of the 47%. Here's the link. Yes. Well, we know. Hi, Johnny. Hey, Sam. In light of last year's AFC Championship game, I will be humble and just say I am looking forward to a clean, fun Ravens-Patriot game this Sunday. Go, Ravens. You have a great weekend, Sam. You should make... Leader of the Jews, a new membership level for the majority. Definitely.
Would that be above or below Sam Cedar?
Oh, no, yeah.
Wait,
I
but
mean,
aren't you, though?
Aren't I the leader of the Jews?
Did someone once call you that on this show? I swear.
Leader of the
someone
Jews?
Someone once called you King of the Jews on this show or something.
Leader of the Jews would probably be above Sam Cedar. I think it would probably be like... Yeah, I mean, it's obviously pretty expensive. Definitely above Sam Cedar. The question is, how much above? I don't know. $5,000-$10,000 a month, maybe? You give $10,000 a month, you can be leader of the Jews.
And Obama can snub you for a pirate, too.
That's right. Spayef, what do you think of the way corporate new blurbs keep playing Obama, saying you can't change Washington from the inside? Out of context? I don't even know what this is.
I can explain it. So Obama was in the Univision forum yesterday, and they asked him – he basically said his big failure in the first term was thinking that you could change Washington from the inside, and he stopped communicating as much as he needed to with the American people.
Wow.
Which he's said – he's alluded to before. It's a smarter way of saying that his messaging was off. It sounds a lot better.
We shouldn't have done – we shouldn't have submerged that OFA stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That's basically what he was applying. So they've jumped all over it and said he's admitting that he's a failure in terms of – and it, you know, it just seems desperate like everything else they're trying
to do. Oh, yeah. It's desperate, and it's it is, you know, a way to at least rhetorically keep this thing alive. You know, I felt bad for Spitzer last night. He's like, this thing's over. I'm like, what are you going to do for the next 6 to 8 weeks? Now, you know, fortunately for Spitzer, he does a lot of actually interesting programming. But, you know, other people, I mean, Tim Pawlenty was the story of, like, 8 months and other venues.
I didn't even
reel me in, people.
I don't even see anyone talking about what Mitt Romney said because everyone was too busy paying attention to he was apparently wearing brown face at the Univision Forum. You heard about that?
He had a very strange tan, and I have to say a lot of friends of mine on Facebook who are of a Latino background noted this. Like, why does Mitt Romney
cannot believe that they would be sitting there going, like, we need to put some bronzer on because you're going to go to – there's just no way. It's got to be just he spent the weekend – you know, he took a couple days off, and he went out, and he's – you know, this is what you do when you run for president. You go get a tan.
That's probably right, but people are still talking about it a lot.
That's the whole point.
That is indicative of when you're in just big trouble. Like, you know, and we've seen this for a while. Mitt Romney, he can't, there's nothing he can do. There's nothing he can do right now. If he specifically kept himself out of the sun, there would be a story of where he's like, where they say like, Governor, I've noticed you've, well, I want to keep my white pale. Oh, gosh. Sorry.
Maybe he's staying out of the sun because he loves those clouds so much.
Oh, yeah.
Why did you look so pale at the Univision Forum? What are you trying to say?
Right.
The cloud thing is great.
The anchor from an ABC News blurb I heard last night on the progressive station I listened to called it manna from heaven for Mitt Romney. That is, I'm sorry. It's just, they're all desperate to keep this a race. Sammy, I'm not a Netflix member, so I don't know for sure that these are available, although I would expect they are. Highly recommend the semi-recent French spy movie parodies, OSS 117. All right. All right, beautiful. Oh, they are on Netflix. Did quick work there. Is there a photo now circling on Facebook, which is clearly mine, you shows that Romney's tan ended at the neckline? Well, I'm not surprised that it would end at the neckline. I'm not surprised that he would wear bronzer. I just don't think that the idea was like, this is going to get us some votes with the Latinos. If you look bronze, they vote for you.
That'll be the next tape.
767654. Sam, let her go. This whole argument is done. Left Coast Marcus. Ladies and gentlemen, liberals and conservatives and libertarians, members and freeloaders are ready for the edict from the Dollar Lunch District. It's time for another Majority Report Freebie Friday. That's pretty good. But that's not what we're looking for, just the words. We want a package. Kim Champion, maybe it's reflective of my inattentiveness towards my personal finances, but I seriously doubt that most of the 47% knows they are among the 47%. Maybe you can ask the young people in your office, but I know my own experience. During all those years I was in grad school, I was probably paying no federal income taxes. But like all working people, I filed my 1040 or whatever and imputed my income, FICA, workman's comp, et cetera, and got back a refund, but didn't crunch the numbers to find out that the refund was equal to or exceeded what I paid in income taxes only, particularly since everything is electronic through TurboTax or whatever. I didn't spend any mental energy to find out what the sum of the total federal income tax I paid, but like most people, I figured the refund didn't exceed what I paid, particularly when the conflating federal income taxes with other taxes. If Democrats want to make hay out of this, they have to tell people explicitly, if you have or made $30,000 or less, then chances are you paid no federal income taxes, etc. I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. I mean, the way that I run this business, even, I have an accountant. I tell him I want to run payroll. I say, you know, we got this much money in the bank. Tell me what the numbers are. And he files them electronically. I'm pretty sure it's all just Social Security and FICA. And then at the end of the year, Nikki sends him all the stuff that I've collected on spreadsheets. I can't even deal with it. And then we get a tax bill. And I just know, I know that we send some to the IRS. We send some to New York State. I feel like there's one, maybe New York City. But I don't know what the breakdown, I don't know any of it. I don't know. I don't know how many people go to H&R Block or to go to, you know, have it done with their accountants or just do it through TurboTax. It spits out a number for them. But the last thing in the world I want to do is find out, you know, what breaks down to what. I give them if I have any deductions, I give it to them. If I don't, I don't care. I want to get so far away from that whole process that I cannot stand it. And so I agree. The person who would call in as Rupert Murdoch should call Sam, I believe. Yes, it was Rupert Murdoch who called me King of the Jews.
That was great.
AdamBond99, completely agreed on Obama's personality. I used to obsess over the question of Bush not caring or Bush being malignant. It took me years to realize it just didn't matter. The actions are the same, whether he's swept up in a Shakespearean tragedy or he's purposely trying to ruin the country. Either way, he destroyed our finances and killed hundreds of thousands. Indeed. It's fun to talk about sometimes. I like to laugh about George Bush and his problems with his daddy. But at the end of the day, you know, it's the same thing with him as it was with Obama. You're president. That's what you say about Breitbart, too. You can't criticize him. He was a good dad and good parent. Good for him. Good for his family. But I didn't know Andrew Breitbart because if he was a father or because he was good with his, nice to his wife. I'm not talking about the guy who, you know, at the PTA. I know Andrew Breitbart because of what he does as a public figure. And so I will judge him as a public figure. In a million years, I couldn't tell you if Obama's a good guy or a bad guy as a person. You know, I mean, I think it's just like, it doesn't matter. Because it's still not predictive of anything. Because then you got to work in, is he weak? Is he over his head? It doesn't matter. You judge him by his actions. And the actions that are more relevant to me are the policy ones. I mean, I guess you could, you don't want a president who's promoting guys who do dogfights. But I would put that, and if that is an effective way of like basically putting you in the circle, you know, they had an ad out there about Obama being outside the circle. I mean, Romney of being outside the circle. This is a concept of when you're trying to make a case to someone, like if you're a litigator, you go in and you want to make sure that you are perceived within the sort of like circle of reasonableness that the jury has. So you want them to feel like you have the similar worldview as they do. And so if this is an effective thing to educate people about other issues, great. If it's an issue in and of itself, do I agree that it's a problem? Yeah, it is a problem. It's not the highest of problems. Does this make me think that Michael Vick is a horrible human being? Yeah. Not a great one. But I don't know. You know, there's a lot of horrible human beings out there. It's just you want to mitigate what their capacity to do is.
I wouldn't be here if Sam looked at how horrible of a human being I am.
Really?
No.
Oh.
That sounds really interesting, man. What are you
up to? We're going to have to do that on Monday. Weinberg did a great book, The Bush Tragedy. Fun to read, meaningless, though. Jacob Weisberg. All right, folks. Oh, we're close. Bush and Chains over the past years, 20 years, Romney gave to charity an average of 13.45% of their gross income and suddenly climbs to 30% in 2011. Lies, lies, lies. Romney's generous charitable donations in 2011 would have significantly reduced their tax obligation for the year. Romney has thus limited their deduction of charitable contributions to conform to the governor's statement in August. Mormon Church threatens to excommunicate member who criticized Romney. Yeah, I don't know what to make of it, but I'd rather see 2009 in the final I Am of the week. Ladies and gentlemen, comes from Clower. What happened to the alternative minimum tax?
This graphic dinner plate was just four.
I think I had your computer up. I don't know what happened there.
What happened to the alternative minimum tax? I make a lot less than Romney, and I'm sure I have a smaller deductions, but I get hit with AMT. How does Romney avoid it? I don't know. I don't know how he avoids. I mean, we're looking at his federal taxes, right? We're not looking at his state. Yeah, he avoids it because he just doesn't pay any income tax. He pays a capital gains tax, basically.
All right, folks, I believe. See you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. The nuns shifted it into you, while I shifted in and out.